This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Managed to disgrace itself by disrupting a very ancient culture simply to go after a madman who was set to self-destruct and suing for peace. Anyway, Rhys Ehrlich joins us this morning. He will be talking about Eugene, and then I believe it's tomorrow night, yes, here in Portland, the uprisings in Southwest Asia and North Africa in the context of this 10-year anniversary of shame. And Reem Khalifa is back. Loyal listeners will know that Reem was on 2 years ago in March when the uprising in Bahrain had first set off, triggered, of course, by similar freedom movements in Tunisia and all across North Africa. Bahrain, though, has a special case as a client state. And after that interview 2 years ago, she was not able to speak with us. We're very glad she's safe. She's joining us by phone from Manama, the capital of beleaguered Bahrain, to talk about the surge of unrest on the second anniversary of the uprising. First, this briefly from the National Weather Service. Day starts out with a blanket of fog in some places, otherwise mostly sunny, with a high around 59. Partly cloudy overnight, lows around 39. Chance of showers tomorrow with a high near 51. And Saturday night, it looks to be mostly cloudy, lows around 38. A nice day on Sunday, highs near 50, and Sunday night, overcast skies, lows around 35, bringing us full circle to Monday morning. We are going to forego the alternative forecast today because we have Rhys Ehrlich on the line right now. Rhys is just, I believe it's in Eugene today, will be in Portland on the 16th tomorrow. And if you have, many listeners have read his books and have attended the lectures, and Rhys does absolutely remarkable work. He's a journalist and an author. He'll be speaking about the wave of popular uprising in Southwest Asia and North Africa and setting this whole 10-year anniversary in some sort of context. Good morning, Rhys. Thanks for being with us. Well, we're really glad to have you with us. I've been reading on your website some of the postings, Bahrain, the labor unions, and other issues. These are extraordinary times. Can you talk a little bit about this 10th anniversary and what it signifies and as far as America's course and direction?
Well, I don't know if your listeners have noticed, but the U.S. has lost the war in Iraq and has lost the war in Afghanistan, and it's just not acknowledged in Washington yet. And that's what I'll be talking about in my talk at the Unitarian Church Saturday night in Portland. But I just got back from Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, like literally 48 hours ago. And the good news is that the people of the region are not succumbing to the repression, that after 2 years of violent repression in Bahrain, people came out in even larger numbers to protest the government. And it's not a Shia versus Sunni battle. It's a people of Bahrain against the government battle. And they're asking for basic democratic rights, a parliamentary system, and the freedom to organize, the freedom to assemble, and so on.
Oh, it seems so that America's peculiarly skewed notion of diplomacy, though, is interfering. Yeah, it's come to my attention. The U.S. is not as enthusiastically supporting the uprising in Bahrain.
Yeah, I can't understand why they wouldn't support the popular movements against pro-U.S. government dictatorships, but they're all out in force to oppose governments that don't like the U.S. The U.S. has an incredibly hypocritical policy in the Middle East. It supported Ben Ali in Tunisia and Mubarak in Egypt right up to the last possible minute until it was obvious these guys were on their way out, and then suddenly became a champion of democracy. In Syria, they've launched supporting secretly, clandestinely arming the opposition and meddling in every way it can in Syria because it was an anti-U.S. Government regime in power in Syria, a horrible dictatorship, but critical of the U.S. Whereas in Bahrain, you've got an absolute monarchy that is shooting its own people. It killed a teenager yesterday in the demonstrations. And I had been in that village just the day before that shooting took place. And but it's got the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet stationed in Bahrain. They get oil, the Western countries get oil from Bahrain. So you just kind of do a tut-tut, slap on the hand kind of criticism of the human rights abuses there. The U.S. policy is 110% hypocritical.
It would seem so. And again, nowhere, of course, more evident than Afghanistan. The reports what really is going on, the stunning brutality, and then the nation-building face that gets slapped on it. Everyone knows what the situation is there. Withdrawing from Afghanistan, just on a final note, I want to ask you about that. As the U.S. finally turns tail and leaves the country, they're not really leaving, though. So again, that's a lie.
Right.
How is that? How is the presence of the U.S. so-called advisors going to?
Well, the idea is to lose the war without being obvious that you've lost the war. Politically, the U.S. has already lost in Afghanistan. There's no base of popular support for the U.S. intervention anymore. The various opposition forces, the Taliban and its allies, are ascendant in various parts of the country, and the Karzai government has practically no popular support. But the U.S., if it pulls all the troops out like it did in Iraq, the Taliban would come to power, or their allies would come to power very quickly. So, in theory, the Obama administration wants to keep U.S. influence and control by keeping troops stationed there. But if you have even 10,000 troops, let alone 5,000 or fewer, you can't control the country like you do now. And it's going to; those troops are going to come under attack. The Karzai government is going to be under attack, and it's a losing proposition. So if we do an interview a year, two, 3 years down the line, it'll be obvious that the U.S. has lost the war in Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, no one has ever conquered the Afghani people. What I wonder about, though, is the presence of the Taliban and the country we are just about out of time, and I do want very, very briefly to ask you about I've been to Afghanistan, and I don't see how an extremely repressive regime such as the Taliban would mean. I don't see Afghanis accepting that in any way, shape, or form. It's simply not the national character.
There'll be a civil war after the U.S. pulls out. And there's no. The problem, of course, is that the Taliban and these right-wing Islamist forces have taken on the mantle of being against the foreign outside occupier. And the U.S. set this up from the time it invaded and occupied Afghanistan. So, but the people of Afghanistan do not want to see the return of the Taliban. So I suspect there'll be continued fighting after the U.S. draws down, or whether it keeps troops there or not.
Reese, thank you so much. I'm really glad you could be with us today. And I just want to let listeners know that it's tomorrow night, February 16th, that's Saturday. Reese Ehrlich will be speaking on the Middle East in the Arab Spring, 10 years after the invasion of Iraq. It's going to be at the Elliott Chapel at the First Unitarian Church. That's 1011 Southwest 12. Of course, all that information will be available on the KBOO website. And commend listeners' attention to Reese Ehrlich's website. There are some extraordinary stories there right now. Many on Bahrain, and I want to thank you very much for that, Reese. We are speaking now with Areem Khalifa. She was a journalist with Al Wazat. We spoke with her about 2 years ago, at which time her life as a journalist in Bahrain became extremely dangerous. And we are very happy to welcome you back to the KBOO airwaves. Good morning, Areem.
Hello, good morning to you.
Thanks so much for being with us. Can you tell us, my last guest, Reese Ehrlich, was just in Bahrain days ago. What have you seen? And 55 people have been killed in these two-year interregnums, as it were. And this time around, the protests, how do they differ from what you saw before?
Well, you know, the situation has not really changed. It's just that things are getting, you know, more accelerating and more is getting worse, especially, you know, with the insisting demands that the people ask and call for every day in Bahrain. It's just I need I would like to highlight two things that yesterday was the second anniversary for the Bahraini uprising, and today all opposition societies called for a mass rally, and in the rally actually the youth decided to go in the other side to confront the security forces as they disagree with the dialogue that the opposition decided in the last minute last week to participate with the other of the government parties as the government you know represented in this dialogue with the three ministers and other loyal groups. So basically you can see what's happening after 2 years. There is a division between people demands, people calling, the young people calling for the down of the regime, while the opposition is calling for a reform within the constitutional monarchy, since the constitutional monarchy was addressed in the National Action Charter by the king himself 12 years ago. So not to forget also that these demands are not really a new demand when it comes for elected government and also for political reforms that includes many, many parts and free media.
One question as well for you. With the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet being stationed there, it would seem that there would be virtually no military intervention, but perhaps just a bit of flexing of muscle on the part of the U.S. Presence in support of the uprising, and yet the U.S. has stood by, and they did when the Saudis tanks were rolling through the streets 2 years ago. Have you had any discourse at all with U.S. representatives in the region?
Well, you know, the U.S. suggested to have what we call it the Beaker Report. It was actually an American idea for the all the things that was committed by the government side and the armies, whether the Bahraini army or the GCC army, when the crackdown happened 2 years ago. As a result, I have to mention just the latest info that yesterday in the clashes in various areas caused the death of 16 years old boy by a bird shotgun pellet. And also the government announced that a police man was killed yesterday in the confrontation. And today also there was a heavy confrontation still going on in various areas. On the main Bidea Highway, the police used fired tear gas and stun grenade, and while the protesters used stones. And there is too many vandalism work is happening in the street because of this chaos that's going on.
Reem, hang on for a moment. I'd like to invite you back to do a bit more of this that we can record. We are out of time for now. I want to just let listeners know we've been speaking with Reem Khalifa. She's a journalist in Bahrain, and that is a report of what's happening right now. There's more news, of course, and we'll try to get that up on the KBOO Air Cascadia site. This has been Air Cascadia for Friday, February 15th. Sam engineered the show today. Kathy Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, we feature Roadmap to Apartheid, a powerful new film on the Israeli ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Also, our weekly report on Occupied Palestine with Nora Barris-Friedman and the electronic intifada.net. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. First up on today's show, our weekly report on Occupied Palestine with Nora Barris-Friedman and the electronic intifada.net.
This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, Zionist bullies and local officials team up in an attempt to censor an event on the Israel boycott movement at Brooklyn College in New York. We'll speak with reporter Alex Kane of Mondo Weiss in New York City to talk about the attacks by anti-Palestinian leaders and their boycott smear campaign, and what this means in the context of growing support for the Palestine Solidarity Movement. Also, zero justice, not one charge in more than 100 cases against Israeli soldiers for attacking Palestinians in 2012. Israeli forces arrest lawmakers in raids on cities under the so-called control of the Palestinian Authority. Palestinians in the Jerusalem area to be evicted as Israel plans to build new garbage dumps on their villages, and news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, including how Israel is stepping up its SodaStream marketing in an attempt to greenwash settlement crimes. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. We begin in New York City. An event organized by the Brooklyn College chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine, featuring a discussion by Omar Barghouti, an activist, author, and founding member of the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel, and Dr. Judith Butler, a philosopher, professor, author, and a member of Jewish Voice for Peace, was held on Thursday night. But not